Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Cultivated Being Podcast. Two brothers, two hearts. Dr. Nick is my name, and this is my brother, Dr. Jake. He lives in Florida. I'm in Northern California. What's going on, Jake?
Nick, it's me. I miss you. I thought it was going somewhere with that. Two brothers, two hearts. And I was like, what's going to be next? And nothing. I was thinking one podcast.
That would have been good.
That could be the next tagline.
That is the next tagline. Hot and spicy health. Two health brothers, tips. Two hearts. Health tips. Yeah.
Yeah.
Two brothers, two hearts, one podcast. That's a good one. It makes me feel emotional. And you know what? This is emotional. When we were sharing bunk beds way back when, and you would have told me that we were going to have a podcast about health, I would have been like, what's a podcast?
And yep.
Yeah. I probably
would have told you in high school, we're out back shooting hoops. And I'm like, Nick, we're both going to be doctors one day and we're going to have a podcast. I've been like, I don't like school.
No. Yeah. I've been like, first of all, that sounds like a lot of work. And second of all, there's no way they're going to let me do that. Yeah. I mean, do you ever feel like that? Just as an adult, you're like, I have no adult supervision. And sometimes you feel like, like, how can people let me do, you know, whatever I'm going to do, right? Like staying up late, watching something fun on a work night or whatever, you know, and eating whatever you want. I mean, do you ever have those moments where you just remember being a kid and you feel like you're still kind of a kid, except that there's no adult supervision?
Yeah, I have some real adult moments. Sometimes it's like with being a business owner and just like running it by myself, just like someone should be in charge of me sometimes.
Yeah, I feel that way a lot. Yeah.
It's real easy to just be like, wait, when did I become a doctor? When did I become a business owner? Why am I doing this by myself? Mm-hmm. I want someone to boss me around sometimes.
Totally. I have somebody who rents out my whole space on a Tuesday afternoon. So I can't see anybody in here. I've been doing house calls, seeing people on Tuesday afternoon, but I just started that. So it's not full. So sometimes I'll go home on a Tuesday afternoon. It's like 1 o'clock and I'm like, mm-hmm. I have no work to do right now. It's so weird, you know? Like, it's a Tuesday afternoon. Like, what am I gonna do?
Feel like you're playing hooky?
Yeah, it totally feels like I'm ditching.
But you should go to like a daytime like matinee cinema. That's the weirdest feeling.
Oh yeah.
Just go to a movie in the afternoon on a work day. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do it, Nick. Report back to us. We all want to know how you feel about it.
Probably not good.
Have you seen Marvel's Endgame yet?
I have.
Have you seen John Wick 3 yet?
Oh, did I?
No, I didn't. Have you seen Detective Pikachu?
No. Probably I won't either. Maybe when it's on TV or something.
Definitely when it's on TV.
John Wick is so cool. And honestly, it's like highbrow ballet, but with action. It's insane what happens in that.
It is beautifully choreographed, isn't it?
Totally. Totally it is.
And then people get shot in the head.
Yeah.
It's like a beautiful ballet with headshots.
Well, you're going to love Halle Berry in this one. Does an awesome job.
Here she does all the stunts with Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, and she was saying, you know, they had this long, intensive training program for it. Probably some of our listeners aren't interested in this, but long and intensive training program because they want these actors to do all of the stuff. So they want them to look like they've been training as assassins their whole lives. They're really believable on camera. And anyways, early on in the shooting, she's doing all this stuff. They're doing all this work. And she's like, I can't do anymore. Like, I can't film anything else today. She just hit a wall. And she went to the doctor and found out that she had 3 broken ribs. This is Halle Berry, right? Mm-hmm. 3 broken ribs. And she was like, if I tell them, they're probably going to recast me. Like, they're probably going to kick me out. Yeah. Cause this is like, we're shooting everything. And so she calls up the director to tell him. He's like, okay, you can still film tomorrow. Like, just, you know, walk it off and like film. She's like, yeah, I'll do it and whatever. But just, that gave me a lot of appreciation for Halle Berry. She's kind of a beast.
Yeah. I wonder if
3 broken ribs.
The director's like, all right, we're going to write that into the script. Broken ribs.
Yeah. Well, it's cool. I mean, I've been thinking growing up, I think I wanted to be in movies, not to be famous. I just really liked movies. You know, you and your friends were making a lot of movies. Like, you're just filming everything.
Oh yeah.
And Greg and I were making a lot of movies, Greg Spenla and I, and I love doing that, man. And so to watch a movie like John Wick, it's like, this is what I would have wanted to do as a kid. Like, this would have been the ultimate thing I could have ever done in my life. Like the 4th grade Nick. So it's cool to see when someone does that and you're like, yeah,
does it like perfectly.
Totally.
Yeah. I appreciate good art and I love movies because it's like multiple art forms in one, right? It's performance. It is writing. It is photography and filmography. It is costume design. It's set design. It is music.
Yeah.
It all comes together. It's amazing.
Yeah. It is amazing. And like, it's just coming out more and more with all the things you could stream online right now. And there just seems to be more, not less, of all of the good art.
I do like to think about the like evolution too of action movies, because there's been plenty, like a lot of the blockbuster modern movies aren't that good. There just happens to be some really excellent ones. And I think back to like John Wick, who's this highly trained assassin who, when you're on camera or when you're watching, you're like, yeah, that dude's definitely an assassin. And then you go back and you go back, watch some of these old like James Bond movies when you're like, this guy's like the world's best spy. And then you see him like get into like a hand fight. He's doing like his judo chops. Barely can move. Looks like a guy smokes like 2 packs a day because the actor probably did.
Yeah.
And he was probably half drunk anyway when he filmed.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sounds about
right.
And
then right. And then you look at the modern like Daniel Craig action sequences with that James Bond, and it's like, oh yeah, movies have gotten better. I don't care what people say, they have. Especially action movies.
Certainly action movies. But there's definitely something to be said for the actual acting quality caliber that they had back in the day. And writing, right? The writing, because that's what you had to work with, man. It was like, this better be really good writing, and the acting better be top notch. We were watching this last week. We watched a Doris Day movie, my wife and I, because Doris Day just passed away. And we also watched Shop Around the Corner with James Stewart. What's the leading female? I can't remember her name. The acting is just, it's insane, man. They're so good. So captivating. And they used to do a lot of rehearsals back then. No one does rehearsals anymore in movies. So they would like read it. They'd go through it. They practice together. They'd rehearse like a bunch of times before they ever pressed film. Cause when they pressed film, it was like so hard to edit back then. So they just wanted everything to be perfect when you press record. And no one practices anymore. You don't have you don't have months of rehearsals before shooting a movie.
Well, like John Wick, you do.
Right.
You have like a year of rehearsals for those movies.
Totally.
But I know what you mean. Like the new Marvel movie, they don't even, like a lot of those actors didn't even get scripts. Or if they did, they were given like one page at a time. no one had a full script of that movie because it's so secretive. Mm-hmm. And I think like some of the ones that were really bad at spoiling secrets didn't even get pages. They were just fed lines in their earpiece. Because Tom Holland, who plays Spider-Man, was like notorious for accidentally telling people things.
Yeah.
So like they never even let him have a script. And I think they were given these special pads that I heard, like these iPads with the script on it. It was digitized. And like it was like Mission Impossible, where it's like self-destructed after reading. So it was controlled remotely, and it's just like you get the page or the pages that you need for that day, and that's what you get.
Yeah.
So yeah, not rehearsing lines, that's for sure. But John Wick is well rehearsed. That's why it's so beautiful to watch it.
Totally. And at the same time, Keanu Reeves probably has like 5 lines in the whole movie. Yeah.
Guns. Lots of guns. That was from the trailer. Remember that line?
Which is also from The Matrix.
Oh, that's why I remember it. I'm like, Matrix throwback.
Well, do you know the director of John Wick is his stunt double in The Matrix? That's how these guys knew each other.
My mind's blown.
Isn't that crazy? They probably at one point looked really similar from behind. Not anymore though. They don't look anything alike. Anyways, we should probably talk about non-movie things at some point.
Do you want to do spicy health tips?
Let's do it, man.
It's what the people want.
It is what the people want. They're craving this stuff.
All right. What do you want to talk about?
I had something I wanted to talk about.
Want to talk pH? Because I'm interested in that topic right now a little bit.
Yeah, let's do it.
So we talked a little about nutrition. One of my general rules of nutrition is like more anti-inflammatory foods versus inflammatory, and like somewhat alkaline diet. So I think we talked about this on the pod last week with Catherine a little bit, but like, because we talked about like lemons being acidic, but they alkalize the body. So the scale that we generally use is from like 1 to 14 when we're measuring the pH of something, 7 being neutral. So like your basic water, clean purified water is a 7. It's neutral. And lemon juice is acidic and it actually has a lower pH. So that's kind of confusing. So we should probably get like this nomenclature clarified. So lower pH means more acidic. Higher pH means more basic or more alkaline. And your body is really made to thrive on slightly alkaline.
Yeah.
Your blood, for example, has to be at a pH of like around 7.4.
Yeah.
Very little room to vary, like 7.35 to 7.45.
If it goes outside of that, you die. Apparently.
Yeah. So you never
hear of anyone dying from that because our body's good at balancing, but
they die for something else. So yeah, you never test blood pH because you know what it is.
Yeah.
But to keep your blood at that pH, it'll borrow from other systems. Like it'll leach minerals from say your bones, for example, because minerals are typically very alkalizing. So if you have a very acidic diet, to keep your blood the way it is, your body will borrow and rob from other systems just to like make sure that you're alive. So again, this comes back to survival, right? Your body's going to do what it needs to survive. And a lot of symptomology is just your body surviving. And that could be even things like heart disease and cancer could just be your body surviving. Because our colleagues in holistic wellness or alternative wellness love saying, you were made to thrive, not survive, right? You've heard that. Well, yep. Your body and your mind, your body and your brain didn't get that memo. It's 100% designed to survive. It's going to prioritize survival at all times just to keep you alive a little bit longer. Now, like your soul, you could say your spirit. Now that was created to survive. That can transcend, that can thrive. Body doesn't agree. Your body's going to survive. So it leaches minerals from other systems, and then your other systems, like your muscles, your bones, organs, can become acidic, and they do not do well in acidic environments. So it's important to alkalize. So should we talk about, well, yeah, this is talk basic foods. This is going to go very basic.
I want to say this because you brought up this great point that it just happens with, you know, your systems of your body, one might be affected or affected or another. I will say, just to make this really relevant for people, I often, if people have several different spots of their body that they're feeling pain in, right? They're like, oh, my left shoulder and my knee, and I'm kind of sore back here. And then my glutes are kind of sore too. I feel tight in my hamstrings, right? If people are telling me a whole list of things that they're tight or they're dealing with pain, I'm already thinking we gotta, you know, make them more alkaline, because that's going to help get rid of the pain. And almost 100% of the people that I've done that with have come at some point back, I don't really feel any of that anymore, just from going more alkaline.
It's a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about acidic foods. Easy. I mean, it's the ones you probably already know are bad. So sugar, acidic, grains, acidic, proteins, acidic. It's not that bad, but it is acidic.
Even more acidic are the proteins that that animal eats grains. So
sure. So if you're eating like industrial farmed animal products, they're more acidic than, say, grass fed or pasture raised, and more acidic than like vegetable proteins. But protein,
yeah,
the basic structure of protein is still fairly or mildly acidic. So if you just like lived on or like pasture raised organic chicken breasts all the time, and that was it, you wouldn't feel so well. That's why like those Hollywood diets where they're eating a ton of chicken breasts, because they're getting that protein because they're training so hard. Mm-hmm. They have a ton of broccoli too, to alkalize and balance out all the protein. So they don't get sick. Because again, if they got too acidic, they couldn't train hard, right? Their body would start breaking down. So those are the basics. And then alkalizing foods are mineral rich foods. So for the most part, you know, vegetables, fruits as well, but vegetables are go-to. And let's talk about like alkalizing waters. Are you into that, Nick?
Sure. I like alkalizing waters. It's not the only part of the water that's important. You know, water is super important. There's lots of qualities of water and attributes of water that are important, not just alkalinity. But I do like alkaline waters. I don't find, generally speaking, that that's going to be the fix for somebody if they're really acidic. Maybe if like that day, I know the persons are showing up. Maybe if that day they're acidic, I'll be like, you know, go get some alkaline water. And that usually does help. Or like, you know, go get like a green juice or something like that. That's going to help. Mm-hmm. Just balance them out a little bit in the moment. That does help, but that's not usually my go-to strategy to make someone more alkaline.
Yeah. Cause I want to talk about non-dietary things that make us acidic, because it's not just what we eat.
Let's do it.
Ready
now
for this? You want a hot spicy health tips? Mm. All right. This is very near and dear to us, but one of the most powerful acidifying things, because again, we've talked about this a lot on the show. You consume a good amount of the chemicals that your body has to deal with. And by chemicals, I mean like everything's a chemical. H2O, like water is a chemical, right? You consume a lot of chemicals, but you synthesize a ton of them. All right, your body makes chemicals, and it makes chemicals based on perceived need, what it thinks it needs. And you can create acidifying conditions in your body by other ways as well. And maybe the more powerful one is inaccurate or outdated belief systems based on survival or fight or flight instincts. So outdated meaning maybe you created this mental program at a young age because you thought, because maybe you thought there was some real danger. But as an adult, it's outdated. It's not useful anymore, but it's still driving you into defense physiology, which can be very acidic. Any thoughts, Nick?
That's awesome. That's my thought. It's commentary.
So go ahead. You can keep rolling. I'll go to the next one because it's similar. So one's outdated belief systems, which could be, I need to be this to survive, right? I need to be a people pleaser to survive, right? The other one is just stored trauma. So unresolved pain in your life, retained in memory, which could be retained in things such as like unresolved anger, unforgiveness, things like that. Those emotions, every emotion you have creates a cascade of chemical reactions in your body. So if you're operating in anger, you're going to be making biochemistry, which is compatible with anger, which is acidic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one thing I like to remind people about is we are very good. I mean, it's a really good defense mechanism when something super traumatic happens to you that you repress it, which is unconscious. Like you don't even remember that this thing happened. Some people who have really traumatic episodes of one thing or another, they don't even have, they can't recall, right? Oh, it got blurry. I can't remember what happened after this thing happened, you know, whatever. So when all of a sudden some of those memories might start coming to the forefront and then their physiology changes. So they're years after the fact this happens, but all of a sudden now their body, and maybe it's not even conscious, maybe it's all subconscious. Their body is starting to release some of that tension, that repression that you've been dealing with for years. And now your body is starting to try to heal from this. And now you're dealing with all this defense physiology, anger, you know, going through the cycle of grief and healing and all that stuff. And now your body's being affected. So it's like, oh, I don't even, because I get a lot of people who something will come up in our treatment, something that was traumatic. And they're like, but that was so long ago. I haven't thought about that in forever. I'm like, Your body's still thinking about it. Your brain got bored of thinking about it, but your body is right there.
And maybe it's kind of coming up because you're in a healthy enough place where you're ready to heal from it. So it was repressing to help you survive, right? Because of the stress was a lot for you to handle, but maybe you're in a place now where your consciousness and your subconscious are both like in agreement. Yeah, we can handle this now. Let's deal with this. Let's finally process. So now things are coming to the surface. I don't know about you, Nick, but there's so many times in treatment that something comes up and people are like, I just talked about this with my counselor. Talked about this with my mom. It's like, yeah, you're ready. It's time.
It's time. Yeah. Go on.
So another flavor of this is in line with that. And it's resistant thinking, resisting the present moment or resisting the lesson that's in front of you. I tell this to people all the time. Health isn't the absence of symptomology. It's not the absence of suffering. Health is growth. Health is becoming a more evolved or enlightened human being. And suffering, or you could say symptomology, is opportunities to learn lessons, right? It's opportunities to level up. It's communication to you that things aren't as good as they could be, and it's time to make some changes. So, you know this. We talk about it. It's a very common chiropractic thing that, like, pain is your body behaving appropriately. It's communication from body to your conscious mind saying something's not okay. Right? That's a very basic example of this idea. But health is about learning lessons. And a lot of people, well, Dr. Mortar, one of my favorite chiropractors of all time, says that symptoms are just unlearned lessons. If you can learn the lesson of the moment, then you no longer need to suffer in the capacity that you were.
I want to say two pitfalls in that, right? Two pitfalls. Okay. So that's what's supposed to be happening, right? Unlearned lesson. One pitfall is that we keep picking at the wound, right? We're mm-hmm. at the backside of healing and I start to pick the wound and there's fresh blood. And then I say, well, I must not be healed from it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, well, there's fresh blood because you won't leave it alone. Your body is healing. It's created a scab and now you just keep picking at it. This happens a lot when people, they just want to keep thinking about the same times in their life where they've been hurt or wounded or victimized in one way or another. They want to think about it over and over and over again. It's really addicting to think about these things because it's a high, it can create higher energy, right? To get angry rather than just to be apathetic about something. That's a lot of energy. And so it's kind of rewarding, right? But I want to remind people that's a pitfall. Don't pick at it, right? Don't experience it again. Witness it. You can witness it and let it go.
I tell people all the time. So like we work on letting go of a thing, feelings of inadequacy, for example, right? And I tell them it's not about never feeling inadequate again. That's a big task. Your job is just to notice it. Your job is to be like, oh, okay, I'm experiencing inadequacy. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. I love and accept myself in that. And I can let go of that. And then you move on with your day. You don't be like, dang it. That's me being inadequate again. And I'm no good.
Yeah.
I keep failing at this, right? That's resisting. That's perpetuating the cycle. If you just notice it, like observation or witnessing, like you said, okay, that's an inadequate thought, inadequate self-talk. And yeah, that's not who I am. And I don't need to have that anymore. And then you just carry on.
Yeah. That's really important. That is really important. I think everyone experiences that at some point. It's all over the healing process. I forget the second pitfall, so we'll just have to move on.
All right, maybe I'll spark it. Here's another idea. So this would be unrealistic emotional paradigms. Kind of based on the duality of good versus bad, or, you know, this idea of perfectionism, for example, is a good example. For example, it is a good example. So like perfectionism, this unrealistic model we're trying to chase. Now, you and I know the truth about perfectionism. We're constantly unfolding the perfection within when we're moving through our growth cycles. But this mainstream commercialized idea of perfectionism that I can't have faults, that creates an acidifying environment as well. And again, and I guess I would fall under the category of outdated beliefs as well. But yeah, unrealistic emotional paradigms, your thoughts.
Yeah, we want to edit out everything that seems wrong about us, but what we ought to be doing is surrendering everything, surrendering everything anyways. Right. To the point where, you know, we talk about humility a bunch, right? Humility is being exactly who you are, knowing who exactly you are and accepting that. That's humility. Sometimes it's better than we think. Sometimes it's worse than we think. But if we're in that place of humility, we're invincible to this. If you're humble in this regard, you're invincible to all kinds of emotional issues having to do with perfectionism and having to do with self-hatred, you know, feelings of inadequacy in any way. I don't know, some of my thoughts about it.
Good thoughts, Nick. Thanks for sharing. All right, here's a good one I see a lot. We're starting to get out of the emotional realm here. But the reason I brought that up is because the emotional part of it is the most acidifying thing we experience. That's not really talked about in mainstream. This one is, though. This is an excess of any activity that your body can't adapt to. So more than your body can deal with. And I see this a lot in overtraining. I treat athletes and they train too much. It's too hard on the body. The body doesn't adapt to it and it gets acidic.
Yeah, this happens to me a bunch of times.
How do you know if you're overtraining?
That is a great question. I'll say
you know,
anecdotally for me.
There you go.
My sleep won't feel so productive.
Meaning you're waking up tired?
Yeah.
Well,
not just like, oh, my body feels sore or something like that. It was just like, well, that's what would happen if I trained a bunch the day before. But I wake up feeling really tired. Like I need to sleep a lot more, but I'm having
if you're training too hard, your rest requirement goes up. What people don't realize is professional athletes that train a ton invest even more energy and time into resting and recovery practices, which we don't have time to. The rest of us like just go to our job. But these other athletes are doing like acupuncture and massage and icing, and they have private chefs and they have all these luxuries to help their body recoup from their training. And a lot of them still probably overtrain.
But a lot of them are taking like naps in the middle of the day too, as well as getting like full 8 hours of sleep minimum, you know,
luxuries.
Yeah.
I usually notice in historically when I have overtrained is I just get injured. my body just like says, nope, I'm making you take time off. Mm-hmm. And, that's an old idiom of just lay down before your body makes you lay down.
Totally. I will say for me, Jake, you know, Jake's a lot thinner than me. If I overtrain, I'll see that I start to look puffier.
you're inflamed. Yeah.
I become more inflamed. Right. So a lot of times when that happens, I'm like, okay, I stop training for a couple days and then I'll actually lose a bunch of weight in those days. I haven't been training. My body's just finally able to recover and my inflammation goes down and the calories and whatever else that I, you know, the fat that I should have lost the days before, all of a sudden it looks like I did.
Yeah. So this is a tough one for some people to deal with, but if someone comes to me and they're like, I don't get it. I'm working out all the time. I'm eating really clean and I'm not losing any weight. I'll be like, it's because you're working out all the time. You're overtraining and your body's exhausted. If you cut your workouts down and you ate really clean and your like adrenal and your stress response got to calm down, you probably start losing weight.
Yeah.
Most people, it really depends on training and your other stress levels besides the physical stress, but it's tough to say, like generally speaking, just to make a claim how much you should be working out because it's highly variable. But yeah, if you're tired all the time, probably overtraining. Unless you're tired all the time and you don't work out, you are not overtraining. It's something else. But if you work out a lot and you're tired all the time, you're probably overtraining. If sleep doesn't feel like it's enough and it's not because you're not, you know, like me personally, last couple of weeks, my life has changed to where I'm not getting as much sleep as I know I should be, just because lifestyle circumstances, but I actually have great energy. So, but I've also cut back my training because I know I don't have the capacity to really adapt to it because my sleep's down. So I'm working out a lot less these last couple of weeks. The other thing I already mentioned, injury and I'll just monitor energy levels. Working out should create energy for you.
Yeah.
If you do it in the right balance.
Yeah. That's why for a lot of people, you know, they haven't been working out for a while. and they go to working out, and that first week it looks like, oh my gosh, the results look amazing, right? And then after that, they stop getting the results. It's, they've plateaued because their body can't handle the amount of stress it's dealing with. I'm speaking from personal experience, all right?
Yeah.
Lots and lots of it. Yeah, and actually, I think one of the more effective ways, if you want to lose a lot of weight, right? You're like, I want to lose a lot of weight. I think a really effective thing is to do a month of, you know, like adrenal fatigue therapies, right? Like, I'm going to really rejuvenate my stress systems of my body. And then after a month of that, you do some of these things in moderation, right? You got to find the right thing for your body. So,
adrenal fatigue's very common right now. And I was diagnosed with that, you know, about 10 years or so ago. And they said it's just very common with college athletes. Why? College athletes train way too much and they don't have some college athletes, depending on like your program and your school, you're basically treated like a professional athlete. But at other colleges, smaller colleges, like where you and I went, we train super hard and then we just like have to study all the time and then like work a part-time job and then still be a college kid and be, you know, have fun and whatever. So I exhausted my system.
Your recovery drink is a keg of beer. No, it's not exactly healthy athletics for sure, but yeah.
No. But yeah, the rugby team, you guys aren't doing like two-a-days practicing either. And like mandatory gym time, like weightlifting time. Were you? Nick's bowing his head.
I was. All right. Yeah, I was scared of getting hit by these huge guys. Yeah, I was doing it as much as I could.
So there you go. Anyway, I don't have adrenal fatigue anymore. Part of it is just becoming a lot more aware of stress and being way more intentional about my rest and taking like adrenal supporting supplements, which aren't that hard to find. And one easy way to test for adrenal fatigue is, remember, Ragland's test. It's an old school type of test.
That is old school.
Test your adrenal. So if you have a blood pressure cuff, which are pretty cheap to buy, but you could probably also find someone who has one, you take your blood pressure. Laying down, I think, is preferred, but I think you could still do it sitting. And so you take it, and then, excuse me, you take it again immediately after standing up. You would think, well, blood just goes down where gravity wants to, so it goes down toward the feet, right? So you would think like blood pressure might, you know, in your arm might take a dip. However, we have a built-in mechanism to keep that from happening, right? Because if blood's going down to your feet, that means it's also leaving your brain, and you can't have blood just leave your brain quickly every time you go from like sitting or laying down stance to a standing posture. So in our carotid artery in our neck, we have these little pressure sensors that are directly connected to your adrenal gland. And when it senses a dip in pressure, it immediately signals your adrenals to make a little bit of adrenaline. You're not getting like a huge adrenaline rush every time you stand up, but a little adrenaline to momentarily spike your heart rate and your blood pressure to keep blood pressure the same in your brain. But what should happen is it goes up in your arm. So you'd see a spike in blood pressure momentarily after you stand. So if you take your blood pressure laying down or seated and then take it standing, it should go up. But if it stays the same or if it goes down, adrenal fatigue.
That is that is a hot and spicy health tip right there, man.
It's old school doctoring right there.
Yeah.
Let's round out this list. I think I have a couple more ideas. One we didn't get to is environmental factors.
We're talking about alkalinity.
Oh, yeah.
Nutrition.
You're just tuning in.
The commercial break about adrenal fatigue that we just had. Yeah.
Common causes of acidity in your body, which we know your body doesn't function well in acidity, and most diseases, whether it's arthritis or whether it's cancer, those disease conditions thrive in acidic environments. So one thing we didn't talk about is environmental factors like toxins, like ionizing radiation, endocrine disruptors in our products. So things that interrupt or mess with your hormones, even electromagnetic pollution. I hate to say it, but things like Wi-Fi and smart meters and cell phones can all create or influence acidic conditions in your body. Your thoughts?
We all know that this is true. These things can influence. I think I have been surprised as a clinician to see how often this is actually the case. You know, we do these other things and we're getting some results, and then we're like, well, what about environmental stuff? We usually ask it like several appointments into care. We're not getting the results that we want. What about environmental factors? There's one environmental factor that just screams out. We're like, okay, we got to change this. And then all of a sudden they get better, right? It's like that happens a lot more than I was expecting it to. Environment is really important. We know this when it comes to plants quite well, and we think it does not, it means nothing to me as a human being for some reason.
Sure. So hot tips. Ground yourself periodically. And so what that means is connect your feet to the earth. The beach or in your backyard, in a forest preferably, has some of the best grounding, like mineral compounds in the soil. And it helps discharge. We get like static buildup in our bodies. We could probably do a whole episode on that.
The quickest way, if you want some grounding now, and you're listening to this, take your shoes off, fill up a puddle right next to a tree. At the base of the tree, put enough water there, put your feet in the water right there at the base of the tree. That's like instant grounding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, the water will, conduct the energy better.
Sure. I like walking in like the shallow parts on the beach too.
Yeah.
But nothing really beats forest, or so I'm told. We maybe talk about that more in another episode. Another good idea. So you got to ground yourself periodically. Another good idea is, you know, when resting is the most important function in your body, so i.e. sleep, don't give it extra things to have to deal with and adapt to. So if you sleep next to your phone, I know some people like to use it for a clock or an alarm clock, put it in airplane mode. Please. It's important. And I know some people are like, well, you know, I might need, there might be an emergency in the middle of the night, right? So say if like teenage kids or something, and they're, you go to bed before they do or something like that, or you have like a sick person you care for that might have to call you in the middle of the night. Fine. Put your phone on do not disturb mode. I don't know about all phones, but I know with iPhones, we had it. Listen to our cell phone hacks podcast. I just remembered we had one. But if you put it in do not disturb mode and you add people to favorites, only they can call you. So you're not going to be disturbed in the middle of the night by someone not on the list, and put the cell phone far away from you, not in your nightstand, opposite side of the room, in the hallway. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just don't sleep with it next to your head.
Yeah, I think that, you know, smartphones are becoming smarter, and I think you could even set some settings on certain people who can message you in the middle of the night and no one else can.
Yeah, but not when it's on airplane mode. So,
well, it's on like, I don't know, whatever, quiet hours or something like that.
Yeah, quiet hours, meaning like the people who can reach you, it's going to be limited, but the radiation from...
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm saying you could do that and then also put it on the other side of the room. It would drive me nuts if I was getting like email notifications in the middle of the night and the phone is on the other side of the room, you know?
Well, hot and spicy health tips were don't let yourself get email notifications on your phone anyway.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
It's a big distraction in your life.
It's a great thing. You can also do if, you know, if we're going to get really into detail here, we'd probably say with smart meters, I've heard you can cover, if there's a smart meter next to where you sleep, you can cover some area with like aluminum foil or sheet of metal between you and the smart meter. And that does help reflect a lot of that energy. So it's not hitting you in the middle of the night. Done that with a couple of patients. Huge. It's been a huge thing for them. What were some of the other electromagnetic things you're talking about? Wi-Fi. You can turn Wi-Fi off in the middle of the night. We talked about that.
Said, yeah, if you can just turn your Wi-Fi off in your home in general, that's great. Now, if you live in like a condo building with, you're getting like 20 Wi-Fi signals in your space, you can buy EMF disruptors. Now, EMF, so electromagnetic frequencies, aren't bad. There's what you would call native or natural EMFs that just come from the earth. And we're biologically compatible with it because we're from the earth as well. But some of these artificial ones like Wi-Fi and 5G networks are biologically disruptive. So you can get these machines that essentially send like counter waves to neutralize or to alter those waves. Now, I really didn't think too much about these until recently, and I saw that very notable like researcher was able to measure this and observe this, and those work. Now, I'm sure like anything, there's really lousy ones on the market that don't work, so I would do your research, but you can just turn it on in your home or in your bedroom, and it neutralizes those artificial EMFs that come into your room. Crazy.
If you're really interested in this stuff, I know in a lot of towns, especially in California, you'll see this. Sorry, Midwest, if you get this, but you can look up a specialist in town who will come out to your home and with all kinds of technology and actually test your home, test each room, test where your kids sleep, all that stuff. And then they'll optimize your home for protecting you against EMF. Pretty cool stuff. People also have solar panels on their house and, you know, the wires go through certain places that maybe you're not even aware of. There's a lot of kinds of stuff. Now people are getting these big batteries for their solar power panels, which it's not good to be near big batteries that are currently operating. There's a lot of this stuff, but yeah, if you're really interested, you could look up, I'm sure you could probably find a YouTube channel as well where people talk about this stuff really in detail. Yeah, interesting for sure.
Yeah. Very. That's all I got, Nick.
I think it even in some places, I want to say Japan, they don't allow that much. There's like laws against how much Wi-Fi exposure kids have in schools and stuff. Like you can't, only maybe one room will have it. And they try to limit this stuff for kids. We don't do that here in the US, but correct me please if I'm wrong. I don't know if it's Japan or some other country. I just remember coming across an article about it like 5 years ago. So I can't remember the stuff.
Yeah, if Nick's wrong and you know he is, please write in. Let us know how wrong Nick is.
And if I'm right, keep it to yourself, okay? But yeah,
I do think it's interesting how the big tech guys, like the big fancy schools out in Silicon Valley, these same companies that have been pushing for smart devices in the classrooms have removed them from their kids' schools.
Yeah.
I think that's interesting.
Like Steve Jobs didn't let his kids have any any encounter with iPhone as a kid or iPad or anything.
Yeah, but it's it's not just Steve Jobs, it's these more elite schools for, you know, the wealthier or more privileged people in Silicon Valley. They're taking all the devices out of the schools.
Yeah. It is interesting. And then they'll still do a grant where they'll pay for another school to have all for real. It's like crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah, these are all future. They're all future customers. Got to get those kids on those products, man. Yeah.
It is interesting. I do want to say we failed to mention what I think is one of my favorite ways of helping myself alkalize trace minerals. Oh, yeah. I wanted to mention it. That's one of my favorite ways of doing it. We talked about how minerals.
Explain the difference between a macro mineral or trace.
Well, I don't know.
I'll do
question.
It.
No. Go for it.
Okay, so like these macro minerals that we need are things like sodium and magnesium and potassium. We need large amounts of them in order for our bodies to function. Trace minerals are things that we need in very small amounts, like gold and arsenic and, you know, 100 other ones that are toxic in high levels, but we need them for specific chemical reactions our bodies do. And they're alkalizing.
Yeah. So it's nice. You don't take that much per day, obviously. But one little hack for y'all who are going to try this out is if you are alkaline, when you take the trace minerals, they'll taste kind of sweet or sweeter. And if you're acidic, you take them, it'll be really bitter. It's my little hack for it.
Uh-huh. And by when I said like gold as trace mineral, that's not an actual one. Don't go like eating little bits of gold. It's fairly inert, but like, other things like copper certainly qualify.
Yeah. We should do an episode on, not a whole episode, but next time we talk more about supplements. I mean, copper, go do my research. There's really bad forms of copper out there that have been shown time and time again to have a link with neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's.
Or like Wilson's disease.
You got to take a lot of copper for that, I think, right? But
yeah, well, that's Wilson's disease is when your body doesn't have the ability to break down copper and use it, so it like builds up in your system.
And yeah,
it does create neurological issues.
You'll see it in the skin, and they'll have some eye issues, I think, too.
Retinas, yeah. If you look closely in a retina, there'll be a copper ring called Kaiser Fischer rings. That's like super trivial, like boards examination stuff. But I remember that for some reason. I don't know why.
Oh, man. Syphilis was my go-to. If I didn't know what the thing that they were talking about, like some kind of rare sign that you see, like Argyle-Robertson syndrome or whatever, I'd be like, probably syphilis. It's syphilis causes that, I'm sure.
I think it does.
Yeah. So anyways, I think those are some good hacks and some good things to think about.
Yeah. Let's all get more alkaline. See how we feel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
it's organic.
That's probably a wrap right there. About. Yeah.
That's a podcast.
That is a good pod. I liked it at least.
Yeah. Talked about movies.
That's Jacob. Good. If we had an alter ego podcast, not the cultivated being, what would it be? It would have something to do with movies, though. It'd just be like movies and music. Jake and I could probably talk about that forever. It was just.
Yeah, we probably know more about that than.
That and cooking. Oh my gosh. That is what we got to do, Jake. Okay. I'm telling you, I'm already
excited. This is the most excited I've seen you already. All right, go ahead.
I'm already entertained by this. But at some point, the next couple years, you and I are going to shoot a mini season with some professional videographers of a travel cooking show.
Okay.
Yep. And you and I are going to road trip and we're going to cook with some people, and it's going to kind of have a health bend to it, but really it's not going to be that health oriented. We're going to have a show together. It's going to be a blast. I could already see in the intro video, us sharing a Vespa as we ride across the country, like Dumb and Dumber style, and go and eat and drink at places.
I've got the Vespa.
This is already coming together, man. All right. Anyways, I do got to go.
All right. DrJakeHyde.com if you want to reach me. CultivatedBeing@gmail.com.
TheCultivatedBeing.com.
Inside Out Health.
GetInsideOutHealth.com
to reach me. And reach out. We'd love hearing from you. We'd love suggestions about topics. And we like hearing when Nick was wrong about something. Mm-hmm.
That is one of my favorite things. And I'm the one who reads the email, so especially the things that you find wrong about me. I'm open to all criticism.
Yeah, it's great. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in.
Love you, man.
Love you too, bro. Goodbye.
See ya.